Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
I am your host, Tanya Communication Doctor, and the reason I do this show is because I want to provide a space for people to speak their authentic truth, coming from a heart space rather than a head space. Allow people to get into their space of consciousness, their space of confidence, and their space of connection. This, I think, promotes positive mental health, and this is why I do what I do. Hello, hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Sean Pascal and Patrick Mensah. Hello, Sean and Paul, Patrick. Where did Paul come from? I don't know. Hello, Paul. Someone in. Oh, dear. And I just want to introduce us. Sean Pascal is a police officer, and Patrick Mensah is a veteran and also now a full-time student. And it's really lovely to have you both on the show as two Black men. It's lovely to have you on the show. And also lovely the fact that you've both been in service to the community in terms of your jobs. You know, you've both chosen to be in service to the community. So I'm going to start off by asking you both, before I kind of dive deep, just tell me kind of what inspired you to be in service to your community. So what inspired you to be a police officer, Sean? And I'll ask the same question to you, Patrick, in terms of being a veteran.
Okay. Well, they say in life that there's two important times in your life, the day you're born and the day you find your purpose. I joined the police when I was 31 years old. Oh. But the calling has always been there to join the police from an early age. And, you know, because of the difficulties between the Black community and the police, it was very much frowned upon. And, you know, I wasn't supported in making that leap into policing. But I remember when I was 14 years old, my mum asked me what I wanted to do, and I told her I wanted to be a police officer, and she just like absolutely shut down that idea.
Wow.
And so, you know, it was, you know, I had a series of jobs, dead end jobs leading up to joining the police. But there came a point in my life when I was getting married, starting a family, and I needed to have a career. I needed to have stability, and I didn't want to be one of those parents, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, that push their kids to do something without actually being a role model myself. Mm. So, actions speak louder than words. At the time, my where I was working, my boss, he was this elderly white man, really charming, bit of a Scrooge. But I really liked him because he was very regimented and fair, and we'd known each other for many years. And he used to be in the police back in the 60s, and he's very proud of that. So, he encouraged me to join as well, which was really nice. He was at the point now where he was selling up his business and he was going to retire. So, yeah, and I was at that crossroads and I thought, you know what, if I don't do it now, I might never do it. It wasn't a difficult decision, but I was scared of what I was going to face. But I'm so glad I faced that fear and joined. It wasn't easy, as in academically, because I'd left school with only a handful of GCSEs. Mm. I'd never seen through further education. So all my experience was based on life. But it was, you know, that's probably one of the best educations I could have had.
No, definitely.
Especially in my role. So that's sort of how I got into policing.
Mm. That's really interesting, actually. And I do agree with you. I think life is the best education always, actually. As you said, especially for the work that you do. I love what you said in terms of being that role model for actions, speaking louder than words, and actually to show that you're doing what you're doing. Because that does happen a lot within families, isn't it? There's a lot of there can be a lot of dictating. And then sometimes a child could feel pressured to do something or become something that they may not even want to do. And it may not be purpose, because you mentioned purpose. And I think that's really important to me as well, is finding your purpose and doing something that I suppose it takes a while for some people, but when you're on that path, it's a different energy altogether. So that's really crucial.
It's very important, I think, if you can, you do something you love. Mm. Because, you know, it's something you're going to be doing for a very long time.
Yes, most definitely.
Patrick,
Can you tell me about, you know, becoming a veteran, you know, and what inspired you to become a veteran looking back?
Mm. Well, looking back, I would say maybe genes also played part, because served in the Ghanaian army. I was born also in the Ghanaian army. So when he's not about, we used to wear his boots and, you know, his clothing and, you know, teenagers and, you know, and it was kind of something that is kind of revered, you know. You have some kind of extra respect, really. You command some societal respect when you have these greens on and this machismo kind of, I think that was at the back of my mind. And when I came over to the UK and I had the opportunity to join, it was more like something that was burning within me, you know, to kind of achieve, you know. It was a kind of a challenge that, oh, my father's done it, you know, and probably, you know, I can also do it, you know. I joined up, and we saw places, lots of experience and that, but that was the main kind of driver thing. There was something kind of instinctive, really.
That's interesting. I love that in terms of that respect. Sometimes as family as well, that's so important, isn't it, really? Certain jobs are looked upon in a certain way, aren't they? Especially in certain cultures.
Yes.
You know, there's certain cultures. And when you said that, I could almost, I don't know, your father was imagining kind of this Ghanaian man, you know, strong. You know, you're going to do that. And I suppose as a child, if you see that, you kind of want to be like your father or be
exactly.
That. Which is lovely. And I'm just going to link it, Gavin. I'm going to go to you first this time, Patrick, linking that to your childhood. If you were to look back, what was one of the nicest memories that you had as a young person?
I would say, there are these church festivals that we used to celebrate, you know, and do kind of Feast of Tabernacles, Days of Atonement, and normally held around September or October times. And when those times we get to travel to, you know, conventions, like, you know, go to maybe the universities, and everybody have their own apartment and that, and we go to meetings and we have loads of food and, you know, loads of communal activities, and it was kind of fun. What I remember, when we were very young, there were two places. One was Cape Coast University that we went, and the most poignant one was University of Legon. And the memory that stays in my mind is in the evening times when you hear all the birds, you know, And then with this sweet-scented Queen of the Night. And these memories, you know, it was kind of something extraordinary, you know, when people feel so happy and, you know, people come from all parts of the country because you don't get to see them. So mm-hmm. at this particular time, everybody comes together and there's lots of fun and lots of different people. And those were the memories that, you know, we shared. And my father would, you know, be with us and we'll be reading us lots of stories and telling us stories and cooking and yeah. It was kind of intimate times and really, really important, yeah.
That's lovely, actually. As I'm listening there, I'm getting a real sense of community.
Yeah.
And as you were talking just about that event, there's a love, you obviously love for people and family and people coming together and celebrations, and
exactly.
which is lovely, which is a nice kind of picture of someone's child. I'm almost seeing the colours as well, and you talked about the birds.
Yeah.
Which is really quiet. So did you grow up in Ghana?
Yes, I grew up in Ghana. I came over to the UK at the age of 23.
Mm.
Yeah.
Brilliant, so, brilliant. So it's that's a real transition.
Quite long that
well.
I joined up in Ghana.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's beautiful. So it's a very different world, isn't it? And how did you find that transition from being in Ghana to coming over here?
Yeah, it was my cousin invited me. I mean, he's one of the my heroes, but yeah, he invited me, and things, you know, transpired into other things. So I kind of had a close bond. I have still have a close bond with him, you know. We clicked. Yeah. Amazing times, you know. He's always full of fun, and he's such a fun guy to be around, you know. So I mean, just even sitting and watching him would suffice for me. So yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah So he invited me across.
That's nice. Again, another sense of community, family. Yeah. It's brilliant. There's a bit, I'm seeing Fred here. and what about you, Sean? Can you go back to a point in your childhood?
Oh, you know, back then London was a small place, and you know, everybody knew everybody, and there was a real sense of community. Mm. And you know, even just to switch on the radio, everyone would tune into the same radio stations, and if there was a party, everyone would go to that one party. Everyone knew about it, and you know, my mum and dad had a few of those parties back in the days, them house parties. You know, yeah, so that those occasions where family and friends would congregate, come together, really hold a lot of good memories for me, because perhaps more so now, because you know, some of those people have moved on to a higher place.
Yeah.
And also because it doesn't happen as often now, family get togethers. And it's sad, because you know, and you know, it I think it goes towards some of the dysfunction in society now, that we don't have that sense of community like we did before, and togetherness. So I miss that, yeah.
That's so interesting there, because I thought that was just me that missed that, because you know, I feel that it could even be of this Western world or the culture with being in terms of adapting to this Western culture, because I'm sure if you're in Africa or if you're in the Caribbean now, there still is that sense of community. And I suppose I see myself as a spiritual person rather than say a religious person. So I don't go to church every Sunday, but I suppose church is another place where people yes. would gather and so forth and so forth. But
yeah, I think it's because I grew up in Fulham and Wandsworth.
Okay.
Fulham, back in the 70s, prior to the mid 80s, was a lot like Tottenham. It was predominantly a black area. And, you know, and then when the money started to come in, the communities and the families, they got displaced. We got spread out. It became a lot more difficult. But that could be said for many, many communities across, you know, across the UK, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, definitely. And that's interesting, really, because so I grew up around Mitcham. So I know Fulham quite well. Yeah. And it's a very different place now than it was when I was growing up. It was very white and working class. And now it's very much Polish and Sri Lankan. It's a very different energy. It's like there's a lot of diversity, and there's none when I was at school. It was just
exactly.
me.
Yeah. So, totally different. I mean, the only time I get a sense of that community or family is when I return to the West Indies. Because they're just families everywhere. You know, everybody knows everybody from old. And it's a strange feeling. A nice warm feeling at the same time.
I get that And that's lovely as well. Oh, thank you guys for telling me about your childhood. I'm gonna go from the lightest moment to one of the darkest moments, and I'm gonna start with you, Patrick. If you can tell me about something in your life that happened that you found quite challenging, or one of the most challenging points of your life, and it could be related to anything, any time, just looking back.
There are a few incidents that really dims the light for me. The first one is my mum. You know, she passed on before I graduated. You know, which was a shame. That was really challenging, it's hard to kind of really come to terms with that. And yeah, the other bit was deployment, you know, deployment to Iraq.
Wow.
Because we got attacked, and we were kind of moving camps, really. We were, I think, Al Amara, we were closing down the camp, and we were moving back to Shaiba Lock Base. And the night before, I think it was in the afternoon. And I can't forget that, because it just gets imprinted in your mind. You know, we got bombarded. You know, if you had asked me at that time what my name was, I'm not sure I would have been able to tell you that, because It was, you know, horrendous. You know, you could see, you know, bombs dropping left, right, and center.
Wow.
And, you know, the tremor and the dust and, you know, I mean, yeah, it was very, very, very challenging, because we didn't know if we would made it out alive. That was really that. Our radar picked up, you know, after when everything died down. I think it was 120 something rounds that fell in and around the camp. So,
wow, that is to imagine, or just of seeing bombs and dust, just as how you described it.
It was very, very challenging.
I couldn't imagine it. Wow. And do you think that some of that memory you've probably shut down just to be safe, really? Because sometimes it sounds so horrific.
Yeah.
You must have shut some of that down just to feel safe. Was that okay to say that, or describe it in that way?
Yeah, because you don't, I mean, one doesn't want to relieve those moments, you know, don't want to bring them back, you know. We had an incoming again at Kajaki. It's something that you really don't want to recall, but, you know, it shakes you to the core that, you know, I'd never known that, you know, the human body has got so many feelings that you really cannot put words to it.
Wow.
You know,
Yes, gosh, and you mentioned that, you know, the human body is so much different emotions. And I suppose when you're, sometimes you're probably triggered or forced to experience some emotions that most coming from where you're coming from and being a veteran that most people probably wouldn't in their life ever experience, you know. So that sounds really, really quite interesting. Wow, thank you for sharing that with us. That definitely is challenging. Sean, what about your most challenging moment?
Just listening to Patrick, it really puts things in perspective. What a terrifying experience to go through. We don't really comprehend or take the time to think about what people like Patrick do and the sacrifices they make, and the lasting effects of that. I just can't imagine being in that situation and how I would cope. It's that's trauma. That's real trauma. I think about what things I've been through, it really doesn't seem as bad as what Patrick has experienced. I'm not trying to minimize what people like myself go through, but it actually gives me hope that if someone like Patrick can get through that, come out the other side, then there's definitely hope for us all. A lot of the challenges I've faced are really in the beginning, it was adjusting to adulthood, trying to understand what masculinity looks like. I struggled with that for a long time, because I didn't really have anyone to sort of show me or teach me. My dad was around, but he's working and he's doing his thing. I grew up on my own from the age of about 17.
Oh, wow.
Because my parents moved to the States and I couldn't settle there, so I came back. I found it very challenging. It took its toll on me mentally. But then it came a point where I decided I had to take control of my life and I had to grow up. So I returned back home to my parents, who are still in the States. You have to grow up fast in America. You really do. Or they will chew you up and spit you out. I got really badly beaten up when I was out there. I think what hurt me most was the fact nobody believed my side of the story, as in my immediate family, my aunts and uncles and that, and they just wouldn't listen to me. And it's, again, you're in that lonely place, and that really hurt. I got very ill as a result of that, and it took me a long time to get over that, but I managed to get past it, stronger, wiser, and I returned back here determined to turn my life around and have a fresh start. And I did. I had a good spell of making the right choices and being able to deal with challenges. And you think there's nothing you can't deal with that comes your way, but I was wrong. Just when I thought I couldn't go back there again, when things are coming at you thick and fast, and you think you can cope and you're not coping, we're only human, we're only flesh and blood at the end of the day. And I just wasn't mentally prepared for these challenges. So the past 4 or 5 years have been a struggle for me. But
wow. I'm just breathing it in. So when sometimes people tell me something, I might breathe, but it's sometimes I have to take it in, do you know, in terms of what you're saying, because it's there's a lot there from both of you, actually, in terms of your experiences. And it's horrible not to feel heard. That's a really hard thing when you're not, you know, especially people close to you. I think that's quite hard as well. And I just wanted to say to you both, I do feel everybody's pain, I always say this to people, is it's unique to them. Do you know, we've all go through stuff, but everybody's pain is unique to them. And I suppose what I've learned from doing this podcast and just from working with people in general with psychodrama is just to, you know, because it affects them in that way. So it's important to take it in and then let it go, you know. And, you know, man, what it is. I'm also wanting to just come to something you said, Sean, because it's a question that I want to ask. And I also feel it'd be interesting to hear this from a black male perspective as well. I mean, from a black female perspective, I have my perspective, but you mentioned masculinity there and learning how to be a man. I'm going to ask you both a question with regards to that as to what you perceive masculinity to be. And I know it may be an obvious question, but the reason I'm asking that is because sometimes there's a hardness as to what we perceive are, you know, masculinity, femininity. And there's a great weight, you know. I mean, when you both share with me, I'll share with you what I think a woman, you know, from a female perspective, because from a spiritual perspective, energetically, we both have masculine energy and feminine energy, and every human being has both. So it's interesting what you said then. It just really made me think, and I just would like to know what your perception is. It's not right or wrong. It's just perception of what you felt or what you may still now feel the perception of masculinity is.
Okay. Who's first? Patrick?
You know, or me? Let's go for it. Whoever's ready.
After you, Patrick. You look ready. So, I'll follow your lead.
No, I like how you feel.
No worries. Well, to me, I think it, on an individual level, it will differ for everybody. But to me, it's taking charge, you know, and taking charge in terms of, you know, direction, controlling, and showing the way, and also being able to give a compass in terms of maybe emotional navigation, how to manage, you know, fears, worries, disappointments, and all that, which it doesn't tend to be the norm what we see or experience, because these are, and I maybe it kind of resonate with maybe Sean's, you know, challenges in life, because these are a whole lot of confusing energies that we need to be able to have the guidance to be able to decipher how to be. You know, so I think it kind of meanders between, you know, femininity and masculinity. But I think as a masculine male figure, you should have the key to be able to, you know, impart some of these skills to give guidance, not only to issue out correction or guidance and that, but also to show how to be vulnerable, you know, because you cannot dismiss. It is part of us, you know, it is part of us. We all feel it. So if we don't get the guidance in how to manage these things, it kind of spirals out in different ways. And, you know, that's how people express it in different ways. And then we tend to label and blame them, you know, because they don't know how.
You know what, that I'm just so glad that you said what you just said there with regards to vulnerability. And the reason I asked that question, I'm going to ask you as well, Sean, is because sometimes there's a lot of pressure, isn't there, with what masculinity is. And I feel as a man, you know, it looks just like me as a woman, there is that masculine and feminine energy within you, you know, and they, and the feminine energy is probably associated to that nurturing, loving, emotional side. Mm-hmm. And the man is the doer and the action. But we both, we all, as human beings, we have it within us. And I feel it's so important to recognize that as well, because sometimes what a woman may expect from their man, I sometimes can think can feel quite intense, because there might be, okay, you've got to do all of this and I'm going to cover all of that. And actually, sometimes it's about working together, isn't it? And actually acknowledging that actually there's a sensitivity. I mean, I have a son, and there's one thing I notice is his sensitivity, and I think it's absolutely beautiful, you know? And I think, well, what happens? You know, sometimes if some people, what happens? It's that sensitivity is just knocked out of you, or you just can't show it. And there's a problem with mental health.
Yeah.
And there's a problem with suicides and black men. If we look at stats, if you, you know, just for people that are listening, if you look at the stats, they're there. And I feel some of those stats are there because of this perception of masculinity. I mean, what's your feeling on that, Sean? I'm sorry, I just went on there because I had to get it out.
Yeah, no, it's just as you were talking there, something just sort of came to me. A couple of things, really. I think in terms of masculinity, I think ego gets in the way.
Yes.
Mm. And, you know, I don't think I have any sort of ego personally. I've never been sort of an ego person. I couldn't care less, you know, in those terms. I know I've got a strong sense of who I am. And I think also, I think being sensitive and being vulnerable, and, you know, growing up in a black community, there's always been this issue around homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people label men who show that sensitive, vulnerable side of themselves, link that to homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Men have not been able to open up in the way they should have been allowed to because of that stigma, so, you know, we need more education. We need a lot more open-mindedness, and because, you know, we're all human at the end of the day, we all feel pain. And it's important to share that pain and share that experience, because that's the only way we're going to really understand and move forward. So, yeah, that's my understanding of what masculinity should look like is exactly as Patrick explained, but those barriers need to be removed.
Mm-hmm. No, I think what you both said is very good there in terms of very profound, really, with regards to vulnerability and also ego. You mentioned ego, you mentioned vulnerability. And within the black community, that's interesting as well. I feel that I still think things are changing now. I do really feel that things are changing now.
Definitely.
Because there's almost, people are looked down upon, because I mean, I'm a lover of therapy. I love therapy. But things are looked down upon. When I started talking openly about therapy, there was a perception that I've gone mad, you know. And it's like, no, it's about self-growth and reflection. But within the black community, it's like, if you need therapy, sometimes there's a stigma about it, or about you being mad or something wrong over there. And I'm so glad that mental health and, you know, has come to the forefront now in society, and people are actually now addressing things. I mean, it's interesting because I've always journaled, and now I'm seeing a lot of people, like, for example, Michelle Obama has got a book out, Becoming, and she's also got a journal with it. And a lot of these stars are having journals with their books. And that's something you didn't see before. So they're kind of pushing that whole idea of self-reflection. Now, is it just me? Oh, brilliant. We've got Michelle Obama. Yeah, it's brilliant. No, I do love it. And I had to buy the separate book, which is a journal, and she answers lots of questions in it and provokes the mind. I thought it was really good for kind of reflection, which was really interesting. Do you both journal? I have to ask, because I know I don't want to make the assumption just because I'm a woman that I journal. Do men write down feelings? Do you guys write down anything that you feel, or have you used that from therapy to help you, either of you, Patrick?
I don't normally journal, but from the CBT that I had, you know, that I had to write down things and when and how, and it made me feel, and you know, stuff like, and also confronting them. But do journal, but not about my feelings, you know, but other issues and stuff, you know. But because we haven't been, you know, taught how, and it's not a norm for us to do so, and this journaling is very, very difficult, because you have to be very honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the most difficult things, and if you haven't climbed up that self-awareness or self-realization ladder, you can't do it, because you have to confront yourself and be honest with yourself and ask some serious, hard questions, you know. But so most people are afraid and they don't want to do it, you know. So I don't know, maybe I'm afraid, or maybe I don't want to confront things, so I don't do it.
That's really interesting, actually. And it's interesting you mentioned you're being introduced to it through CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, just for anyone that doesn't know. Yeah. And that's just really interesting, because I find it normal myself. I don't know if it's a male female thing, and I've done it for a very long time. I think the first time I started journaling, I was in my teens, but I know it's a very, well, women are encouraged to write things down and speak and so forth, or write diaries and that. And I suppose going back to what Sean said earlier, men sometimes, you know, if you're sensitive or you open up, it's seen differently. But what's really interesting, I'll just share something with you guys before Archie, Sean, at my children's school. What's really great is they've both got these feelings books,
right?
And they write down. So both of them. I've got a girl and I've got a boy. Right. So they're both encouraged, and they're quite, from this young age, to write down their feelings. Mm. And I just feel like, God, if only I could have had a feelings book, I'd have a field day. When I was young, because actually, from a mental perspective, you're taking it out of your mind and putting it on the page.
Yeah.
And it's very powerful. And as you said, you don't feel it's normal, but from the younger you start, the more normal it can become. Yeah. And actually it can release the mind. I mean, what's your feelings on journaling, Sean?
It's not something I've done or ever done. My feelings are that it's something I wouldn't do personally, because I feel it can be weaponized if it falls into the wrong hands.
Okay, interesting. From the police perspective, police officer's perspective.
Yeah.
Detective. Yeah. I like that. We're just looking around. That's interesting.
I like to keep what I have up here. You know, so because you know, that's the best weapon I have is up here, and if people get into up here, then they can, you know, they can't, they can use it against me.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. I suppose another way, I'm just thinking, because I actually really believe in journaling, I suppose another way of doing it is if you write it down but then you destroy it, that's another reason. If you get it out of your head. Because some people say you can write an email. If you've heard this, you can write, not an email, so you can write a letter to yourself, like write down what you're feeling and then delete.
Yeah.
And it's gone. Yeah. So you're released, because I feel like it's just a way of releasing, but everyone's got their way. But it's interesting from the detective.
Yeah, I love that. My journal is my kids.
Yeah.
I pass it down to them.
I love it. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And that's an obvious for me as well. As I asked you that question, I thought, of course. As you said, I thought, of course, he's a police officer. it's our minds, I suppose. You as a veteran as well, I suppose your minds think very differently, isn't it, really? Because you're able to have them to think about what others would do and so forth and so forth.
We're very on the defensive. You know, we're very tactical minded in everything we do.
No, it's understandable. And that's what's beautiful, because it makes us all different, you know, and that's probably why I'm not a police officer. In the other way, you know, everyone's got their things, haven't they?
I think it's really down to your lived experience, you know. In my world, you have to be strategic. And in Patrick's world, definitely you got to be strategic. Being a black man, you have to be strategic.
And I suppose I'm coming from the world of therapy, which is let it all out. So there's a different mindset there as well. But it's just there's no wrongs or rights. It's just interesting
It's just about survival.
Yes. Totally. And I can totally identify and see that as well from the black male perspective as well. And you have, it's like part of it. Yes, you have to release your feelings. I suppose in the school, I think it's really great that they're getting young people to do that. But as they get older, that's something that you probably have to have that conversation with, in terms of, you know, you wouldn't let that get into anybody else's hands. Because like you say, people could weaponize it. And then there's this whole hardness and resilience and shields that you have to put up to protect yourself, don't you, really, when you're going to the big world. But it's nice to be able to be playful from your young, to explore that. Those two different sides. I think it helps with those things. But to lighten it up now, so much there, guys. Really interesting in terms of your perceptions, in terms of how you see things. But just to lighten up, because I'm going to bring it to a close soon, but I can't not talk about some of the biggest achievements that you guys have experienced in your life. So what would you say your biggest achievements or things that you're really proud of, just to lighten up the conversation? Do you want to go first, Patrick?
A few, you know. Graduation, you know, it's because having a, you know, fully blown 13 years career in the military, and then coming out and then going back to university, it's definitely, you know, but eventually it did. So I'm really proud of that, because the journey and the experience that I've had under normal circumstances, you know, I shouldn't be, you know, in academia, but it's a fight.
That's really interesting. What are you studying?
I'm proud of that.
What are you studying, Patrick? Is it your biggest achievement in regards to going back to university?
I'm studying MSc Child and Adult.
So say that again.
I'm studying MSc Child and Adolescent Mental Health.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And that is a transition as well, isn't it, really, from what you've experienced there. And I love that the education is the biggest achievement as well. Yeah. That's very African as well, isn't it? I don't think I know any, in regards to family or whatever, any African man or woman that hasn't got a degree. That's just... A lot of people don't realise that either, you know. It's very much the African way, isn't it? Which is brilliant. I love it. That's brilliant. And what about you, Sean?
My biggest achievement are my kids.
I love that.
I'm very proud of them. That's my biggest achievement. Having good kids.
That's beautiful, you know. And as my father would always say, your children, because there's six of us, your children are your blessings, you know. Children are your blessings, and I do believe that, really. It's the biggest blessings in life, and sharing and someone to pass down your wisdom to.
Yeah, because, you know, everything I do is for my kids and for the next generation, yeah. You know, because, you know, they're all my kids, you know, and I want to see them do well. And I want to, you know, and that's what drives me, you know, you know, I say this time and time again, you know, people have come before us, have made all the same sacrifices, so you and I can have these privileges.
Yes.
And, you know, the best way I can thank them and honour them is by carrying on their work, so it continues, you know, their legacy continues. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. That's so true as well. It's lovely, and that's what drives a lot of us, which is really important, isn't it, to acknowledge that. Lovely, thank you. And just to bring it to a close now, who inspires you? Who are your heroes? And if so, is there a quote that you want to share or anything like that?
I go first?
Or... Go for it.
Okay. Which one first? A quote or who inspires me?
Yeah, who is one of your, I can use the word hero, maybe hero doesn't work, could be inspirer. Sometimes people use words or words trigger something different in their minds. But who are your biggest inspirers in life?
Well, I would say one of my best friends, you know, because he's my mentor. Funny enough, we both served the military, and then because he was, you know, academic orientated, he just did 4 years or 5 years and he left. And then he went and did, you know, double masters and, you know, but yeah, he's earned those ones. And he's an amazing guy. You know, I don't know how he's able, you know, is the, and how, you know, there is something phenomenal about him. You know, he knows so much, and how he imbues that into you. He inspires the confidence out of you. You know, you'll be doubting yourself, and he'll be so calm, and he's always got something to spur you up. You know, he's always got quotes and amazing. You know, he's amazing. As I said, I didn't think I would be able to do it, but he was there with me. He was taking me to open days, you know, encouraging, you know, calling, checking out on you. And it's just amazing. You know, he knows so much, and he knows how, you know, to drive it into you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. You know, just knowing how and how to bring that. Yeah, I'm still with you. I'm still with you, Patrick. That's lovely actually, looking at your friend there, and that support is important, isn't it, really? And someone close to you, that's really important. Yeah. Thank you. What about you, Sean?
I think I kind of answered your question before. Young people really inspire me. They really do. And you know, I have a good network of people around me doing lots of really good work in the community, and you know, we inspire each other by supporting each other, like yourself. You know, absolutely. In terms of mentoring and someone I look up to, one of the people I look up to that comes to mind is a gentleman by the name of Michael Fuller. He was the highest ranking black officer in Britain ever. He was the chief constable for Kent. He's someone I know, and he's written a book. He's written a book called "Kill the Black One First," but I think it's been retitled. And what inspires me about him is, he grew up in foster care. All the odds were stacked against him, but he made it through past all of these challenges and got to the top of his profession. And if you ever get to meet him, he is the nicest, kindest man you ever want to meet. And it doesn't matter what your background is, everybody likes him. because he's fair, and he's just, you know, he's just a really good man, and very humble, and you know, and you know, he's responsible for a lot of things that in the police, but he won't take credit for it. You know, other people take credit for it, but if you actually take the time to find out, you'll find he is the catalyst. So Michael Fuller, QPM.
Thank you for that. I love that. And I love the humbleness there as well. You just, and those are my favorite stories when, you know, when someone's really had to struggle, like you said, we brought up in foster care, and they just, because I suppose, like you say, when the odds are against you, but, you could be, okay, you go down the road of mental health, or you go down the road of this, or gangs or whatever. And when someone comes out from that, you're just like, wow. And then they give back to the community.
Yeah. He didn't see it as a struggle.
Wow.
He didn't see it as a struggle.
That's resilient,
isn't it? he just dealt with it as it came along, know? And, you know, and he got through life. And that's the beautiful thing. I think often we put barriers in front of ourselves, where barriers may exist, but they only exist if you acknowledge them.
That's very true. But the other side of that is that sometimes, you know, coming from that energy as well, you can build so much resilience up.
Yeah.
That you just learned, you break one wall down, you get stronger, you break another wall, you get stronger and stronger and stronger. And what's interesting in this current pandemic, there are some people that are just falling apart because they've never had to cope with anything. Yeah. That's the other side, isn't it? Where you've never had to cope with anything. And some people that I've seen, some people I've spoken to, is people that are really falling apart. And I'm feeling like, wow, I've got some resilience, because sometimes I feel like, oh God, it's tough. But you go through it, and I've got my tools to help me through stuff. But some people really haven't got that resilience, and they are falling apart, and probably because they've never had to experience anything. So I feel sometimes the more you experience, the stronger you can become as well. I do believe that. I do.
Absolutely. That's what shapes us. You know, it's these struggles that shape us. And, you know, what I have learned in life, and I'm sure Patrick will agree, is when these challenges come to you, embrace them.
Yes.
Embrace them, because you know that it they're blessings in disguise, and God has sent these challenges down for a reason. And there are lessons. If you approach them with an open mind, you can learn an awful lot, and you'll come out stronger and wiser. And that's certainly been our experience, and I speak for Patrick and myself. I'm sure.
Yeah,
that's beautiful, and that's a lovely way to end the show. Unless there's anything you want to say, Patrick, you've just leant forward there. Is there something that
And you know, not forgetting, because your last question, I mean, was a two-part one.
Oh, no, sorry, you know, I got so so you do. I get so involved. Thank you for that.
No worries. The quote bit, I mean, it's me. This is just me. I normally say this thing to myself and subconscious, and also to my mates. Yeah. You know, it's something that I say to challenge them, you know, because I am a person who likes to see things get better. And I say to myself, so what are you doing now to change tomorrow? That's why I ask myself. And I challenge, you know, all my mates, you know, what are you doing now to change tomorrow? So as I keep saying to myself, and I keep, you know, in spite of all the difficulties, I look to myself and I ask myself, so if I don't do anything now, tomorrow will not change. So I keep doing things, you know, on a daily basis, you know, to try and make tomorrow better.
Lovely. I love that. And is that your quote? To keep doing stuff to try and make tomorrow better. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I feel that we need that right now, don't we? Perfect for timing as well, in terms of what's happening in the world. Sean, do you want to add to that?
He's Patrick's absolutely right in what he says. You know, we have to keep going. And the only time you lose the fight is when you give up. So, you know, and it's not about making huge strides. It's about keep just even the small steps. So there's not really a quote as such. There's probably a quote for that somewhere.
But,
you know, actually, I think Martin Luther King summed it up, didn't he? And I have a dream speech, or was it I have a dream speech or the promised land one?
It's all the same speech. I remember the vinyl. Yeah. I had a vinyl. It went on forever.
Yeah, yeah, it did.
Sorry, that's made me laugh because I just remembered the vinyl of I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah.
And my dad played it, and I was quite young at the time. And I thought, oh my God, this is going on forever and ever. Yeah. But the promised land is definitely in there. Everything is in that speech. But
absolutely.
As an adult, it's so powerful. But it's a long speech, but there is, you're right, the promised land. And beautiful, so, lots of good words.
Keep going. So,
amazing. Thank you, guys. That's absolutely brilliant. I'm just gonna have to bring it to a close now, just because of time.
Yeah.
But thank you both. I could talk to you forever, both of you. You know.
Thank you.
I must admit, you know, in all the shows that I've done, it's just so nice to have that honesty. I mean, I have honesty all the time, but honesty, I think you summed it up earlier when you talked about the masculinity, and the ego. And the vulnerability. And it's so nice to openly talk about that, because some people have such bravado and you can see that stuff's hidden. But I feel the more we encourage each other to speak from the heart, we can connect with each other. There you go. There's a quote.
Yeah.
There.
I love it.
You're
gonna have to patent that one.
No, definitely. There's loads of quotes in this. I will put them up when I put it through. I'll definitely put these up, these quotes on social media. That you guys have got some great quotes, just in the language and the things that you've said today. When I listen back, or when you listen back, you'll definitely hear them. But I'm just going to say, guys, so from Tanya the Communication Doctor, and from Patrick Mensa and Sean Pascal, adios.
Thank you.
Adios.
Bye.
Thank you.
There's so much takeaways to take from this show. First of all, Sean said, the most important time in life is the day you were born and the day you find your purpose. Life is the best education. Another great quote from Patrick was, if you don't do anything now, tomorrow will not change. Sean said, the only time you lose the fight is when you give up. And I think that's one of my greatest takeaways from the show, that you just got to keep going, and you just got to be honest, and don't be afraid to express yourself, because when you express yourself, it contributes to helping others to understand you through positive communication. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.